issue, but if member to member raised the same issue in a question form when we met the ambassador of the USA, and he gave a response to that particular question. But of course, it was agreed that there would be a suit. I'm not sure who's here from the department. And maybe
this is practical. And that is it possible to, once the documents are ready, to allow for proper preparation, can they be emailed to members on their email addresses? Because that at least will ensure that we get them in advance and can properly prepare, and are independent on being in our offices an hour or two before the meeting. I don't know if that's feasible.
I agree that probably what we need to do is to put up a mechanism with the committee secretary that when you receive documents, they must be displayed. But I know that also the system of parliament is a bigger problem, that service officers do not deliver these documents in time. I got an SMS yesterday that says the document is in my pigeonhole. I only met the document now because when I went to check my pigeonhole, there was nothing in there. Yes, so, but it's a bigger problem that we need to deal with. What we need to do is to do our best at the level of the committee, and then if there's additional problems, deal with them as they come in terms of when do we receive documents and when do they get dispatched from our own administrative arm, and probably impress on the people that will come to present to submit those documents in time also. CDG, you'll probably take us through to all the people who are here.
Well, thanks very much, honorable members of the portfolio committee. As always, it is indeed a pleasure to be here and to discuss with you some of the issues that we're following and we're focusing on in our work the Department of Foreign Affairs. Before I introduce the rest of the members of the delegation, let me respond to your question with respect to the absence of the political officer from the Department of Foreign Affairs. Indeed, you'll recall, Chairperson, that you had addressed a letter to the Director General in this regard ahead of our last briefing on Kenya. And I believe that that was responded to positively. I did convey the sentiments of the portfolio committee as well as your directives in this regard. And I believe that the political officer could not make it to the briefing this morning because of the prior engagement. This is my information, but I will further convey your sentiments and your concerns in this regard. And I will ask the Director General to respond to you in writing in this respect. I hope that you can set it back to Chairperson, I'm here from the Department of Foreign Affairs, as you know. You had asked that we come and present to the Committee on AFRICOM. And since this matter is a matter that straddles not just one of the threads, two departments, mainly Foreign Affairs and the Department of Defense. We've also invited our colleagues from the Department of Defense, and hand over to the EDG, who's sitting right behind me, to introduce this delegation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. As the previous speaker has already indicated, for Foreign Affairs, we are from the Department of Defense, and we request that the Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs is having today. My name is Tepe Mutu. I'm Deputy Director General of Defense Policy, Strategy and Planning in the DOD. And to my right is Lieutenant General Motau, Chief of Defense Intelligence. Next to him is Major General Daniel Fukin, his Chief of Defense Foreign Operations. And to his right, Brigadier General Mayor.
With your indulgence, Chairperson, we propose that Foreign Affairs makes a brief outline and overview, followed by a much more detailed input and presentation by the Department of Defense. With your permission, we would like to propose that we proceed in that manner. Well, thanks a lot. Just by way of background, to say that the African Command, which is our subject of discussion today, was announced by President George Bush of the U.S. On the 6th of February last year. But I'm sure that as your background material, your research information will indicate, the announcement was a culmination of a much longer process of conception and thinking within the American security establishment, but also it included the Department of State of the U.S. So between both Pentagon and the Department of State, there have been ongoing discussions ahead of the announcement around the establishment of an African command that would look at specific issues that I will address later in my presentation. The announcement was officially made a year ago in the U.S. by President Bush. The African Command currently, in the absence of a formal command structure, is shared between the Central Command, which is CENTCOM, Pacific Command, PACOM, and the European Command, EUCOM, with the latter focusing on 42 African countries. The European Command, as you know, is based in Germany, Stuttgart. In fact, we understand that the African Command is likely to be based headquarters in Stuttgart as soon as it is established. This has not been confirmed formally, but this is what we understand is currently being contemplated by the U.S. authorities. So, of all the strategic regions in the U.S.'s policy, both security and foreign policy, Africa is the only region without its own command. We understand that the Americans want to have this operational by the 1st of October this year. In terms of the mission statement, the U.S. command aims to promote U.S. national security objectives. and I'm sure there's a lot of debate about what that constitutes. And they want to do this by working with African countries, with regional organizations, in particular the AU, as well as the RC, the FOR, Maghreb, your Eastern African community, your Central African community, in order to help you to promote stability and security on the continent. They also indicate that the command will lead a multi-agency effort, which will help to implement the foreign security policies and strategies of the U.S. government, and that they would want to proceed with this with the support of international partners. For instance, we understand that there are discussions around embedding an EU command within the U.S. Africa command. And then they would want to the U.S. Africa Command to conduct military operations to deter aggression and respond to crises as it emerges on the continent. So that is the mission statement, which clearly indicates what this whole African Command is all about. In terms of the objectives, there are three pillars that we want to elucidate. The first one is building local security capacity, building the capacity of Africa and African countries to respond to threats and challenges, ensuring that the civilian control of the military and defense reform process, and also instituting professionalism within the armed forces. This is what the authors, the proponents of AFRICOM, maintain as the three pillars that underpin the whole initiative. AFRICOM is intended to achieve, to improve rather the security capacity of Africa, to enhance efforts to bring peace and security to Africa, to promote development, health, education, democracy, and economic growth on the continent, and to play a supportive role towards building democratic institutions as well as good governance. The objectives are continuous in this other slide, and as you can see, these objectives straddle the area of security and politics, as well as the social and economic development. So these are the broad areas that the command will focus on. Supporting U.S. government agencies in implementing security policies, conducting theater security cooperation activities, increasing partner counterterrorism skills, enhancing humanitarian assistance, disaster mitigation, and response activities, foster respect for human rights, support African regional organizations, and conduct military operations. You are aware that the U.S. is leading, for example, the global war on terror. One of the concerns among the authors of the AFRICOM is the possible use of Africa as a base or as an incubator for terrorists or terrorist organizations. And within the framework of the global war on terror, they've entered into a number of partnership agreements with on a bilateral agreement level with various African countries. The tentative to agreement or engagement with countries in the Horn of Africa, for example. You are also aware that the U.S. maintains a military base in Djibouti, in the Horn of Africa, which is quite strategic. And you are also aware that they, within the framework of this global war on terror, they've got a counter-terrorism initiative with the Sahelian countries, as well as with countries of the Horn of Africa, as I mentioned. The U.S. has been attained to indicate that this is not a purely military initiative, but that it will be led by the State Department. That really the whole effort is underpinned by the need to promote stability, to promote peace, to promote development, and that it will be headed, it will be informed by the U.S.'s foreign policy. It won't be purely a military initiative. In this regard, it's mentioned that AFRICOM will support U.S. foreign policy agencies and other humanitarian organizations in their mandate. Civilian oversight will also be instituted along the same lines as that of the Southern Command. And I'll show you later a diagram that illustrates the area of of responsibility and the area of command of the Southern Command. General William Watt has been appointed as commander of AFRICOM. And in order to confirm their view that there will be a strong civilian component, they've appointed as one of the deputy commanders, a civilian. We told that AFRICOM will be composed of about 600 administrative personnel, both civilian and military. And these will be drawn from the existing command structure of the U.S., the European Command, the Pacific Command, as well as the Central Command. We're also informed that there will be no military deployment within the AFRICOM structure on the continent. As you are aware, Chairperson and honorable members, there's been a mixed reaction, a mixed response to this initiative. There are those who have expressed concern and South Africa falls within that European country. There are those who have indicated they are accepted of the initiative. And those who have categorically rejected the initiative. Countries like Libya, Nigeria, and so on. AFRICOM is widely recognized as emanating from U.S. strategic interests in Africa. I'm sure we can debate that later as to what U.S.'s strategic interest constitutes on the African continent. But I've already mentioned one area, which is the global war on terror, how the U.S. wants to build partnerships with African countries in order to ensure that Africa does not use as a base by terrorists. Organizations that they define as a terrorist organization. The map the two maps that we have projected give you an indication of the areas, the various areas that the U.S. Has identified as strategic, and where they have established command. The one on the left, the current, is, yeah, the one that's looking current. You've got the U.S. EU command, which is in Europe, as I said, it's based in Stuttgart. You've got the, and that's in blue. It has oversight over Africa at the moment in the absence of an African command. And then you get the central command, which is largely at the Middle East, the Gulf, and also Egypt falls under that. And then you've got the Northern Command, which looks at North America and so on. Then you've got the Southern Command, which looks at Latin America, the Caribbean and so on. And then you've got the Pacific, U.S. Pacific Command, which looks at the Pacific region. The proposal is now that they establish, as indicated on the right, an African command. And it's all in brown on the slide, right-hand side. The U.S. Africa Command, which, as I said, will exclude Egypt. Egypt will be treated as one of the countries to be dealt with within the framework of the Central Command. I think largely because of the role that it plays in the context of Arab issues. Most African countries have cautioned against this whole initiative. The response has been a bit lukewarm from our country. So far, as we are aware, maybe the colleagues from the United States the latest information, Liberia is the only country which has publicly offered those assets. The question of the location, as far as we know, has been resolved, and that is in debate in the headquarters in Sudan, due to the difficulties currently experienced with African governments and civil society. The colleague from defense will expand on this. The SADC organ on politics and defense has declined formally to hold the AFRICOM in the region. This position is informed by Minister of Military Intervention in Africa. And also, I think the organ believes that it is more desirable to strengthen or to focus on the establishment of the African bread initiatives around the issues of defense. And the focus should really be on the establishment of the regional standby force. The gate, SADC, ECOWAS, CIMAC, Maghreb, as well as East African Community. The AU has not formally taken a position on the matter. We do understand, though, that the Americans have officially made contact with the commission, with the AU commission, and asked that the canvas be discussed among the members so that they can be taken. However, the issue has not yet been discussed in any of the AU summit executive council. Informed by the public decision, South Africa is expressed to hold reservations and concerns about Africa. And we guided by that summit as far as we're concerned, there are serious implications for sovereignty if we were to host a foreign military command on our soil or on any of the African, any on the soil of any of the African countries. And also we've taken a decision that this is an issue that should be resolved not on a bilateral basis but on a multilateral basis. In response to these concerns and the rejection by many African countries, the U.S. is working to allay fears about Africa. It has embarked on a major campaign against countries on a bilateral level to garner support for Africa. And there's a strong view at Pentagon and also at the State Department that there's a lot of misconception about Africa, that the rejection is mainly because people don't understand this whole notion, this whole concept. As far as the Pentagon and the State Department are concerned, this initiative will be African good, African favor, that it will dovetail with the broader development goals as well as the development agenda of the African continent. We will continue together with the Department of Defense and others to monitor developments around Africa. And indeed, we hope that the AU at some point will discuss these issues and take a position that should tie into the entire continent. Thank you.
Maybe in that note, we should just move straight to our colleagues in defense, and then we'll get the two institutions to come in immediately after that to present their perspective.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. As defense, we are an instrument of foreign policy and we take our cue from the Department of Foreign Affairs. So I think the colleague from Foreign Affairs has clearly indicated what the South African country position is. And this having been adopted as an outcome of the regional position that is the Southern African Development Community, in particular the mission of the Minister of Defense of the Southern region, which position was then further elevated to the head of the summit of SADC in August in Lusaka, in 2007. The Department of Defense does have engagement with the U.S. Department of Defense. And in fact, as indicated on the slide that presented last week, we had extensive engagement, bilateral engagement with the U.S. DOD and explained what the country position is. Now, I should state that as a result of the position that the country has taken, compared to the regional position, the effect has been that some of the programs that we have and have been engaging with the U.S. may not the main things which they engage in countries, and in particular multilateral to try and seek solutions and other like to cause and trust in my colleagues.
Just to point out that the change in American foreign policy took place, particularly in 2001, when for the first time in the history of the United States, there was a policy statement which indicated that Africa is emerging as one of the strategic areas for the United States engagement. And since that time, then we see the development of the AFRICOMAS. And what are the commands in the United States sense? The commands, those of us who have gone through the history of the commands, you know that the commands were referred to in the olden days as the U.S. combatant commands. They were combatant commands because they were actually intended to be involved in combat. We know that the European command in particular was actually seized with the task of trying to contain the Soviet Union there, and the Pacific to deal with the problems of Southern America, and the Central Command to deal with the problems of protecting American interests in the oil-rich areas in the Middle East. Now, our approach has perhaps, if you add a little bit to what Mr. Mtumi said, was informed on two understandings which we have. Firstly, is the understanding that in international relations, states interact with each other. They don't interact through any other instrument outside states. And therefore, for us, we engage with the U.S. as the Department of Defense, and we do not engage with a command or any other structure. Neither do they interact with any other structure except our staff with the Department of Defense. Secondly, on the issue of the desirability of us as South Africa and as the region to host foreign military forces on our soil. And our position, it was very clear that South Africa will not hold foreign military forces on us. As the Department of Defense, that is our advice. Which position I think we took to, as Mr. Mtumi took to all multilateral structures. But before I get into what happened in the multilateral structures, the last meeting being the one which took place last week, The position which was taken by SADC in particular was that SADC has got two constraints of acting unilaterally to decide on the issue of the AFRICOMAS. Because one, SADC has got a defense act which was signed, which binds all member states of SADC. And that defense act has got certain rules and certain laws. And therefore, those have to inform the position of each and every member state of SADC, which have to decide on how to proceed. And secondly, that our position on the AFRICOM does not negate the sovereignty of states to enter into bilateral relations with America, as long as those bilateral relations don't militate against the position of our defense. Thirdly, that SADC in itself has taken a decision in its structure, security structure, that we as SADC would like to move towards creating a stronger instrument of this state to be able to deal with security matters, particularly military issues. And that central to that position is the creation of the SADC Standby Brigade. And that the SADC Standby Brigade, therefore, is the instrument which we are going to use to rally around our military forces in order to be able to engage with the issues of peace and stability in the region. So these are the positions which SADC has taken. And of course, the instrument that which actually advises our defense chiefs and ministers of defense and even summit on this issue was the Defense Intelligence Standing Committee of the ISDSC, which actually convened last week to make an assessment of the situation. And our position, which was taken, was to confirm once more the positions which were taken earlier on, and that the recommendations are still going to remain. And this was informed actually by the position which was taken by African countries when they met in New York at the end of last year. And the position which was taken, which meeting was held in the United States, the five regions of the continent actually agreed to take a position that Africa will not hold any foreign military forces on its soil. There's no need to do that. And I think the U.S. was informed, I think the DG Foreign Affairs is correct that the Americans are at least a little bit unhappy with this position. So I think that is the position we should be. I'd like to complete, Chairperson, by saying we have engaged with the U.S., our counterpart in the U.S., and we are very clear to them that the problem of the African command is not an African problem, it's a U.S. problem. They have, throughout the years, designed forces the way they see, and we cannot determine to them how their forces must be designed. And therefore, they can create 10 more commands, they can create another one called the African Command, they can create another one called the South African Command. That is the American prerogative to do. And we have nothing to do with that particular position. But as I said, we indicated to them that there is no way in South Africa we are going to be subjected to conduct our foreign relations with the United States through the African Command. We are going to continue to conduct our foreign relations with the U.S. through the normal structures of state. If it is at the president's level, it will be that, if it's the department level, it will be at that, and it will not be, we will not be subjected to be turned into something which we are not. We are a sovereign state, and therefore will be treated like any other sovereign state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Those are the briefing from the Department of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We asked the Global Institute to participate in this engagement, and we asked the Institute of Security Studies to engage also in this debate because we think that it has serious implications in the long term. So maybe what we need to do is to ask them to engage with us. I'm not sure whether Saya is here already. Because you ask this institute to come engage with us so that we can be able to, when we take the discussion, we can take the whole discussion and look at the issues that our department is raising. And just to say to members, we must also recall the response that we received from the American delegation when we met with them. So, I'm not sure who's going to start. I'm going to leave it with you to decide that.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Fatima Banyana from the Institute for Security Studies, with a program called Regional program, which covers regional organizations, the AU. I've been asked to provide comments on the Africa Command, and I have reformulated the brief in such a way as to be provocative. Certainly, some of the points have actually been covered both by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Defense, and the positions of, particularly the official position of South Africa has been articulated. The content of my brief is to look at the introduction and background. In that respect, I should caution members that I will briefly touch on some of the issues that have been covered already, but I will not belabor the issues in the interest of time. And the second part will cover the mission and objectives, also which has already been articulated by the DCG bilateral Africa. Organizational structure of AFRICOM will be the third area. And then I will delve into the interesting part of the perspective on the continent with respect to this Africa Command. And I will therefore look as my last part at the intersection or linkages between AFRICOM and the APSA. In this respect, APSA is the African Peace and Security Architecture that includes AU, standby forces, and other peace and security initiatives. And then I'll conclude. As indicated in the previous briefing, this AFRICOM was announced by President Bush last year, and he articulated it in the quotations that have been provided there. I'll rather focus on a few things because some of the things have already been touched upon. In terms of the American foreign policy, is to articulate Africa Command as their effort to bring about peace and security. And this is an American way of contributing to the issues of peace and security on the continent. But also, they indicated that they will promote common goals towards the issues of education, health, democracy, economic growth, and the like. The Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, also articulated on this, but from a different perspective, which I think will come later on, showing the dynamics with respect to the different messages that are being communicated coming out of the U.S. In this respect, they are presenting the AFRICOM as a way of realignment of the American military operations, particularly the various commands that have been indicated by the DDG of Africa. In terms of the background, it's important that we note that there has always been a concern with respect to American position or foreign policy towards Africa. Previously, Africa has always been on the margins of the U.S. foreign policy making. And this is an important matter to take into account when we look at the various responses that have come through from African countries. However, America did engage with Africa on a different way, which was on their security concerns. In this respect, I think the input that was the last input with respect to the Cold War is telling. America's response to an engagement with Africa was as a direct response to the USSR expansion and engagement in Africa. And therefore, this resulted in a proxy competition between the two superpowers. Certainly, after the end of the Cold War, we did observe again Africa going back to the historical margins of U.S. foreign policy. And that was to change, of course, in 2001 with the 9/11 event. And in this respect, American security interest changed drastically. And in this respect, America embarked in what is pejoratively termed a global war on terror. It is important to note that this catapulted Africa into the forefront of the American foreign policy, particularly with respect to the American concern with counter-terrorism and counter-insurgency. But of course, that doesn't limit America's interest in Africa. There are other factors also that we need to take into account. And this includes, of course, the issue of the emergence of Africa as one of the largest suppliers of oil to the Americans. And in this respect, there are various countries that include Nigeria, Angola, Algeria, Chad. On the other hand, the emergence of China and India as strategic competitors to America with respect to the expanding energy and mineral resources on the continent has fed, obviously, this interest by the U.S. foreign policy planners. Equally important, and I think we need to point this out, is that the emergence of Africa as an economic player, on average, Africa's economy has been growing at 5.5 to 6% the last data I got was for the 2006 year. And this makes Africa no longer just a peripheral player, but an important player with respect to American policy interest. But certainly, with respect to the launch of Africa Command, we have seen America begin to play an active role in the security sector. And one has to point out to a number of other activities or areas in which the Americans have been playing part. In terms of the programs that are managed by other departments, such as the Africa Contingency Operations Training and Assistance Program, which is called ACOTA, the Operations Enduring Freedom of the Trans-Sahara, which was indicated as the Sahel, which focuses on counterterrorism in countries such as Mauritania, Niger, and the like. But also the combined joint task force of the Horn of Africa, which is focusing on the Somali area, and of course it was conceived as a response by the Americans to prevent what it perceives as terrorists running away from Afghanistan and entering for Africa. I would rather not cover the Africa mission because already it has been pointed out, except to say it has been built as a unique command by the Americans in the sense that it will include an inter-agency cooperation. It will involve other agencies that deal with aid, such as the USAID, but also use diplomacy as another area by involving the U.S. Department of State. But of course, Africa Command is going to oversee security cooperation, building partnerships, as well as providing defense support. The emphasis in recent times has been on non-kinetic activities by this particular command. In that respect, I think non-kinetic refers to non-lethal, at least in the terminology used by Americans. It won't necessarily be the use of force, but diplomacy, as they put it. But of course, Africa Command is seen as supporting U.S. diplomacy, for whatever that means. In terms of structure, all this has already been pointed out, but it should be understood that Africa Command is projected within the context of the restructuring of the U.S. global forces, and that's the concern probably that I will highlight later, why certain people have felt that this could mean the militarization of U.S. foreign policy. Of course, there is this dynamic, and it was raised in the previous presentation with regards to whether AFRICOM means setting up of bases or troop deployment on the continent. Of course, according to the officials, they say no. And yet, there is the aspect of the civilian headquarters or the headquarters that they would like to set up, which, of course, is still not clear in terms of how that in reality would come about. But, of course, the other emphasis is on the civilian-military combination. And I think the issue of one of the deputies being a senior State Department official or diplomat has been told as the uniqueness of this structure. I would like to now move to the important issues of African views with respect to the reservations that have been put forth. Indeed, as I indicated in my first slide showing the statement by the U.S. President and the one by the Defense Secretary, there seems to be a contradiction in terms of what exactly led to the establishment of this new command. On one hand, it seems to be a clear policy, a process of responding to the global threats that are perceived as threatening U.S. national security. But on the other hand, we are being told that this is an overdue process of realignment and restructuring of the Department of Defense's military organization. And in this respect, including Africa, which has been shared as an area of responsibility amongst the three various commands. Of course, one has to ask the question, why is Africa suddenly of such importance to the Americans? And indeed, in most cases, people have pointed out a number of issues which I raised earlier. The militarization of U.S. foreign policy towards Africa is used as one of the reasons why people are so skeptical about why the U.S. is setting up this. Of course, there are other widespread perceptions with respect to the level of proper consultation. In this respect, AFRICOM was presented as a fait accompli, which was already decided and therefore presented as concluded. And that is one area of concern among many Africans, that there was lack of cooperation and, of course, engagement with the partners as the Americans are putting forth. In the other issue of the rise of China and India has been presented also as an area of concern. There is emergence of competition in terms of strategic energy resources, as I indicated, but this is reminiscent of the 19th century scramble for Africa. There are those senses that people feel maybe Americans, the Indians, the Chinese are embarking on a new scramble for Africa, and that has been one area of concern with respect to this, and I hope my colleagues will touch on this issue. The establishment of bases, of course, is one area of concern, and the South African position with respect to the sovereignty of countries, as well as the other arrangements in terms within the context of SADC, has been raised. What it would mean? This, of course, for most people is having U.S. troops on your land may actually not deter, but may invite terrorist attacks, given the positions that a number of countries and organizations hold about U.S. Foreign policy. Indeed, this we have seen already with the attacks that took place in Dar es Salaam and Kenya in the past. Of course, there's also a deep empathy with respect to the post 9/11 position of OSHA and the issue of preemptive military engagement that Americans have shown itself to be in favor where it doesn't get its way at multilateral level. And we know with its engagement in Iraq and Afghanistan and how those came about. And of course, people are reminded of the threats that are currently being directed to countries such as Iran, Syria, and many others. And to this respect, I think one has to only look at the South African official position with regard to those countries and the use of multilateral institutions as an engagement for foreign policy. Of course, there are assumptions that are also built in terms of the AFRICOM. Assumptions that instability in Africa poses a direct threat to U.S. Security, and therefore weak African states will translate into terrorist state areas. This is the position, and this is what others are pointing out. And yet, of course, we know that security concerns of Africa are different from those of America, and the priorities in terms of how to deal with security threats are different across the board. And of course, the last point that I want to interrogate here is that AFRICOM, in terms of the Africa's perspective, will undermine the common policies as indicated in terms of the common Africa defense policy, as well as the post-conflict reconstruction policies. All these are geared towards what I indicated and will be dealing with under APSA. Now, just briefly touching on African linkages and its implication for the emerging Africa peace and security architecture. One of the challenges is it's not clear how this new command and America's perspective will merge with the efforts that are currently in place. In this respect, we have the AU that is supposed to be leading on issues of peace and security on the continent, and it has set up a number of mechanisms that deals with conflict resolution management, and which are important drivers of this particular Africa peace and security architecture. Even regionally, I think the point of SADC has also been pointed out, and that's another area that is currently. To what extent would AFRICOM undermine African leadership on security issues on the continent is one of the important issues that needs to be dealt with and addressed. It's not clear, and the Americans do not necessarily are forthcoming with respect to, yes, they say they support African leadership, yes, they support all these mechanisms, but to what extent do you therefore don't use a new structure that will operate at a different level? It's not addressed fully. Of course, Americans have pointed out the civil-military aspect, as I indicated, which is they have a directorate within AFRICOM that is supposedly will be engaging on issues of capacity building and as well as engagement of bilateral and multilateral. And here, I think we need to reflect on it, because it means American foreign policy will be subsumed, and the driver of American foreign policy in Africa may necessarily be driven by AFRICOM, if in fact these statements are true, and that would actually be driving. Because this interagency linkages means the State Department will be part and parcel of the AFRICOM. Of course, the direction and leadership will be provided by AFRICOM, and that is one area that people are particularly concerned with. And certainly, I think, whereas there are some opportunities, because we cannot stop what the Americans are doing, they already have launched this, And this command will be a reality as they are working towards operationalization of this very command by this year, by the end of this year. It is important, therefore, that how African and regional structures engage with this process and ensure that the Americans don't go through the back door by engaging certain countries, by targeting countries that are willing to work with them on a bilateral or otherwise. But to the extent to which also the AU and the regional architecture play their role with regards to leading and framing what the security needs are. And I certainly wanted to, in terms of towards my concluding this particular brief, it is important to acknowledge that, yes, there are issues and there are consensus security and stability on the continent. That includes terrorism. Algeria would be one area where these particular activities are ongoing. However, those issues that are primary to Africa and African countries include issues of fighting poverty, issues of fighting diseases, dealing with oppressive regimes, and of course the issues of warfare, as in the case of Chad, the rebels are taking the government. These are the most important issues that Africans are concerned with. They do not necessarily focus on issues of counterterrorism and counterinsurgency. Of course, this happens and do take place, but they are not the only issues that are driving the concern for security and stability on the continent. And in terms of concluding, therefore, it is important that this particular committee, South Africa as one of the leading countries on the continent, and given the role it has assumed, it is important that they remind and continuously remain vigilant in terms of ensuring that we do not lose in terms of the principle of Africa solutions to African problems, and then African leadership and ownership with respect to dealing with issues of peace and security on the continent. This cannot be overlooked. Yes, there are challenges, and indeed there are opportunities. We cannot discount the Americans, of course, as I indicated, there are certain programs that are already taking place on bilateral, and we should insist that they work through multilateral. And I attended a meeting in Addis on the training process for the ASF, and it is through those type of structures that the Americans and the Africa should actually play their role rather than operating outside this particular process. I think
honorable members. I'm Michelle Reuters. I'm a senior researcher at the Institute for Global Dialogue, the multilateral program. And thank you very much for this honor for my institution and for me to come and address you this morning. Unfortunately, most of what I wanted to start off with has already been said, so I can skip to the interesting part. It's always difficult to follow on from experts who have been working in the area for a long time. But I hope that I actually introduced a different perspective for the discussion this morning. Just to cover some of the issues that have been covered already, AFRICOM has been established. That is a fact. We're not going to make it go away. It's not going to disappear because Africa doesn't want it. This is something that we have to deal with in our foreign policy on the continent because it's there. It will be operationalized on the 1st of October 2008, and it might be from Stuttgart or from other locations that the Americans are trying to figure out I think the Bush visit to Africa in this last week is an indication of how desperate America is for something to happen on the African continent with regard to AFRICOM. He has visited 5 nations supposedly to reward good governance. We're not quite sure what is being said behind closed doors, but good governance is the propaganda that's been expressed in this. Tanzania has been tremendously rewarded with a major aid package, $398 million, I think. $700 million. That is huge. Yeah. So we need to look at how America is maneuvering to try and divide Africa over the next few months before October comes. And it's up to the African nations to decide how this is going to happen. I think we still have an opportunity to address America's proposal for AFRICOM on the continent. One of the perceptions is that it is a Department of Defense structure, despite the fact that one of the senior deputies is a Department of State person. General, the mere fact that he's a general, General Ward is heading this operation, it makes it a military-focused organization, initiative. And that is one of the issues that I argue against, because the African society is militarized enough in terms of the process that we went through to get out of colonization, our liberation movement, the fact that our military governments are focused, not military governments, our military departments are focused on accruing military power. I know I'm going to upset the Department of Defense in this regard, but accruing military power, military instruments, at the same time that poverty is so bad on this continent. So we're looking at a rational, realist world in which the military still has the power in our state, and yet we have huge social imbalances that need to be addressed. So how do we balance the military and social need on the continent? The presence of China and India on the continent is also very interesting, because America is vying for oil. They're not willing to change the way they do business, so they need the oil. West Africa by 2015 is going to produce 25% of America's oil. What about Chad? What about Angola? You know, once those countries get into the play around oil resources, America is going to rely almost totally on African oil, because the Middle East is lost to them. So we need to work around our power as an oil resource, as oil resource region, as a natural resource region, and try and negotiate on those lines. We enter the relationship from a position of strength, not a position of weakness. I've covered some of those issues. The strategic importance of Africa is there because of especially the Horn of Africa, because of its proximity to the Middle East. And the Horn of Africa is very unstable for reasons that we all know. We need to ensure that the Horn of Africa becomes stable through the African Union, through the Peace and Security Council. There are institutions within the African Union that can ensure that. We need to make sure that identity politics doesn't become the politics of the day, because that is what the Horn of Africa is dealing with. Our countries across the continent have to deal with the fact that identity has been politicized, and in many cases has led to violence and genocide. So the total aid package from the U.S. to Africa amounts to about $9 billion. The consequences of militarization of Africa are fairly self-explanatory. The fact that the military in the AFRICOM constellation is the most powerful means that we consider military solutions to our problems before we consider anything else. It exacerbates the fact that America has supported one side of a conflict for many years, supplied them with arms, and then it turns around and supplies the other side with arms in the next round. You know, this destabilizes the continent, but because our governments are willing to accept that kind of leverage from America, that kind of support, it destabilizes regional relationships, it destabilizes cross-border relationships. And we know that the borders in Africa are colonially imposed. We don't have a nation state that has naturally evolved in Africa. So the state itself has contested space within Africa. Some of the analysts who have been against AFRICOM talk about mission creep, how it starts off as military or support or peacekeeping training from the Americans, and it could possibly permeate the rest of society, and the Americans could possibly become involved in domestic policy. So that is one of the problems that we need to keep an eye on if the Americans do eventually get what they need, which is to operate from Africa. Not a base, because they're arguing that there is no base that they're setting up. This is going to be a lily pad. They use all these wonderful little images, lily pads, frogs, leapfrog into conflict areas. But also, they have publicly stated that there will be no immediate response to conflicts in Africa from AFRICOM. Now, what does that mean? If they're supposed to come and help us secure security and stability and peace on the continent, and yet they're not willing to respond immediately to conflicts or to needs, what are they doing here? Again, it goes back to the fact that this is an American-driven interest. And Africa is just a receptacle for American foreign policy within the global context. My pet subject is gender, so I had to put the last two in there. The hypermasculinity of the military, we know that the military is extremely about force, about men. You need to be a good man, you need to be a strong man. And I'm using men loosely. But it is the because women can be hypermasculine as well within the military. It's the nature of the institution that we have to be careful of. And the gender implications are very clear. We see in other parts of the world where the Americans have set up bases, where a sex industry has evolved or arisen out of the American presence in an area. A sex industry, the rape that occurs by American soldiers on the host communities, everything points to the fact that we should really be careful of it. So the country responses have been covered quite systematically already, but just one thing, Liberia, a woman president, quite surprisingly, says yes to AFRICOM. But I think what we need to consider is the fact that Liberia has had a long colonial relationship with America. They were not occupied, but the returning slaves who had been brought back from America after being freed, or the ones who had been stopped by the British, were returned to Liberia. So there's this connection to America. The rubber industry in Liberia, the colonial rubber industry, post-colonial as well, was American-driven. So Liberia America is completely invested in Liberia. And they interlinked, the economies are so interlinked that it's really difficult for Liberia to say no. So it's about the power of the relationship again. Would Africa be able to say no to the American AFRICOM system? I argue that we can, but it depends on how we address this. And of course, Mr. Lukosa's statement, categorical statement, that we will not be hosting any AFRICOM, any foreign military in Sudan. So the change in American policy came last year, I think, when they met with the African Union and had gone through a whole range of talks on the continent, that they suddenly discovered that all these perceptions, misperceptions, they say, around AFRICOM existed on the continent, that we were not as welcoming. So now they've moved the debate towards development, that it's not about supporting the military, but it's about supporting the military for development.